You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CyberWire's Research Saturday. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is our weekly conversation with researchers and analysts tracking down threats and vulnerabilities and solving some of the hard problems of protecting ourselves in a rapidly evolving cyberspace. Thanks for joining us. And now, a word from our sponsor, Sixsense. Sixsense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With Sixsense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose Sixsense, visit sixsense.com.
We were following up on our more recent Red Alpha campaign work, where we were tracking Chinese cyber espionage against a series of Tibetan community victims and found this really interesting Linux backdoor.
That's Winona DeSombre. She's a threat intelligence researcher at Recorded Future. She's co-author of the report Chinese Cyber Espionage Originating from Tsinghua University Infrastructure, along with her colleagues Sanal Chohan, who we'll hear from in a moment, and Justin Grossfeld.
And upon analyzing the backdoor, we actually noticed some connections to the same web server from Tsinghua University. Now, this university is effectively the MIT of China. So it was incredibly fascinating to find a premier Chinese academic institution trying to break into a Tibetan victim group through an incredibly novel, specifically Linux-based backdoor.
And so that was our kind of entry point into this piece.
That's Sanal Chohan. He's a senior threat intelligence analyst at Recorded Future.
We're expecting it to be a fairly straightforward kind of piece of analysis, looking at this new backdoor, reversing it, looking for some IOCs, and kind of fleshing out our technical analysis accordingly.
Now, take us through some of the background here. I mean, the People's Republic of China has quite a history when it comes to Tibet.
Yes. So the People's Republic of China claims complete sovereignty over Tibet, and all Tibetan independence movements are considered separatist threats, sometimes even terrorist threats, by the Chinese government. So aside from other forms of coercion, cyber espionage against Tibetan targets is pretty up there as a frequently used tool, especially when tensions are running pretty high.
Tibet is generally regarded as one of the five poisons for the Chinese state, that being essentially the five primary risks to the stability of the PRC government, the Chinese Communist Party. So Tibet has long been regarded as an extension of the Chinese mainland. It's treated as such by the Chinese central government, and therefore it poses quite an interesting predicament as far as kind of foreign relations are concerned. The Tibetans themselves, of course, think of themselves as an independent nation and a striving for independence, but that's clamped down upon quite vigorously by the Chinese authorities. And we see that being played out in a variety of different kind of arenas on the peripheral of the kind of Chinese mainland. The same kind of scope is played out with the Taiwanese and also with the Falun Gong movement, which is a pseudo-religious movement that stemmed from the kind of 50s and 60s.
I think the first form of cyber espionage used against Tibet was called GhostNet in 2008, just used as a wider attempt to monitor certain targets of interest within that region.
And Tsinghua University is at the center of your work here. Can you give us some background on what they do there and the part they play within the Chinese community?
Absolutely, yeah. So the Tsinghua University, it's an elite university, renowned globally for its work in high-end technical research and engineering practices. It's state-controlled entirely, and it has extensive links to the Chinese state, somewhat obviously, right? I mean, it's entirely funded by the state. But it does have a long history of affiliation with the People's Liberation Army, the PLA. For example, in 2017, the PLA had partnered with another university called Qian Jiao Tong University to create a cyber militia program. Before that, other universities in China have kind of partnered with various elements of the Chinese state and intelligence services to conduct joint bits of research and to conduct joint operations. And so Tsinghua was something that, again, like I said at the start of the conversation, Dave, I mean, we weren't expecting to see the number of events probing the same device that the back door was found, emanating from the same IP, which resolved at Tsinghua University.
Now, this relationship of the university working hand-in-hand with the government on these sorts of things, was this something that was known to researchers like you, or was this a surprise?
So I want to be clear that we're uncertain of the actual relationship between individuals in Tsinghua conducting any sort of cyber espionage, but we do know that universities of this caliber within China have a very close relationship to the government. For example, the PLA partnered with certain universities to create cyber militia programs. Some APT-17 infrastructure was connected to a professor at a different university. So this sort of cyber cooperation between academic and government institutions in China is pretty common.
I see. So walk us through what you discovered here in terms of the actual analysis of the threat.
When we first found the Tsinghua University IP, we ran a couple scans, found that it is likely, in all likelihood, an internet gateway from the university. And a lot of the traffic that we found was scanning, targeting various institutions at incredibly interesting times in the geopolitical sphere. So, for example, the Tsinghua University IP targeted the Alaskan state government during a time when Governor Walker, the governor of Alaska, was initiating a trade show with other Chinese institutions and really wanted to develop a relationship with Chinese institutions during the height of this U.S.-China trade war. This particular trade show was dubbed Opportunity Alaska, and it consisted of delegates from Alaskan businesses and the fishing, tourism, architecture, and investment industries. And a lot of chatter occurred around the prospect of a gas pipeline between China and Alaska. And during the announcement of Bill Walker getting this trade delegation together, during the trade delegation in China and right after the delegation departed China, Recorded Future noticed multiple attempts at scanning activity at Tsinghua targeting Alaskan state government institutions as well as the Alaska Department of Natural Resources.
You know, the activity emanating from the Tsinghua IP was reconnaissance and not active exploitation. So we've had a few kind of comments come back post the issuing of our report yesterday, kind of questioning, did we see any evidence of actual compromise? Well, no, not directly. But what we can infer from our observation of the reconnaissance is that exploitation may well have taken place, because we've seen the activity probing some of these networks go dark in the last 2 months. And it was quite at quite high levels prior to that.
So the connection here, the, I guess the supposition, is that they're trying to gather information that might be advantageous to their negotiating process or things like that?
Yes, as well as other possibilities that you can get from scanning, right? So by scanning a target system, you can perhaps get a little bit more information about the technical services running on those machines, and even perhaps use that information to conduct more offensive operations against these targets in the future.
So another thing that you highlighted in the research was this thing called the Belt and Road Initiative. Can you describe to us what's going on with that?
So the Belt and Road Initiative in China is effectively China's present-day attempt to create the ancient Silk Road from 2,000 years ago. So by investing in these major infrastructure projects all across the world, particularly in underdeveloped or developing countries, China hopes to transform its geopolitical influence in various regions such as Africa, the Middle East, and parts of Southeast Asia.
So we're looking at an investment program that stretches from China all the way through west, through the Caucasus region, through the Middle East, into East Africa, and also kind of touching Western Europe, with a key kind of train link being established between Beijing and a city in Germany called Duisburg, I think it is. And this is all kind of directly invested in by the Chinese state in order to corral influence, to improve the standing of their economy, and also to create opportunities and economic interests in many of those kind of countries in between. So it's a multi-trillion dollar program that was announced by President Xi Jinping. It's a bit of a baby project of his, really, and he's kind of riding high in the polls as a result of pushing for this in country. But, I mean, essentially, it's a way for the Chinese state to kind of extend their influence beyond the kind of immediate neighborhood in sort of East Asia. So it's proving to be quite an interesting trend to observe from a cyber threat analyst perspective, because, of course, in order for the Chinese to make good on their investments, they're looking for any kind of strategic economic advantage, and the kind of primary way in which they tend to achieve that is through cyber espionage. And so by looking at the potential targeting or potential business relationships with any of those organizations and countries I mentioned in the report, and also to you here, I mean, that will give us a unique insight into potential business relationships and transactions that are taking place between the Chinese and those countries looking to get some money from the Chinese authorities for the BRI.
And so in terms of the scanning that they were doing related to those efforts, how did those align?
For example, Kenya was lobbying for regional projects under this particular Belt and Road Initiative. And China's already funded major, major infrastructure projects in that country. For example, a 480-kilometer railway in Mombasa and its capital, Nairobi. But once the Kenyan Trade Principal Secretary rejected signing a China free trade deal, we saw spikes in network reconnaissance activity after Kenyan establishments. The same thing actually happened in Brazil, and I think it was about 1 month after the China Communications Construction Company began construction within one of the Brazilian ports, and certain areas in Mongolia when the Chinese proposed a new Eurasian land bridge.
Now, another thing you highlighted was probing of Daimler's network. What was going on there?
Yeah, so again, I mean, we didn't see this in our original pool of data dating back to sort of May and early June. In fact, the Daimler paragraph was added fairly late in the day, just prior to publication, because we found the evidence of them being probed. And in a similar way to the way in which the Alaskan network and the Kenyan Ports Authority was being probed in late June. So we're looking at, again, you know, circa sort of 20th to 24th of June, Daimler AG networks were being probed for four specific ports And this again, you know, coincided when we were kind of doing some OSINT. It coincided with the Daimler CEO announcing that there were some profit concerns in light of the growing trade tariffs that were being levied between the Chinese and the US. And with China being their number one market by far, it was obviously of concern to the Daimler kind of chain of command. And so it was quite timely that announcement was made publicly by Daimler. And the next day, we then see the scanning pick up against their network.
Yeah, and that seems to be a clear pattern here, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, something topical happens, and they go out and start poking around.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the one thing that we wanted to kind of project in the report was the varied kind of victim groups. We're talking about kind of a U.S. state government entity. We're talking about a Department of Natural Resources, an official government agency. We're talking about kind of telcos. We're looking at East African kind of investment channels for the Chinese state that relate to the Belt and Road Initiative, and also, you know, vital commercial entities that have obviously invested heavily in China over the years that are also expressing concern in the growing kind of trade difficulties that are arising as a result of the policies being enacted by the Chinese and US governments. And so the one thing we wanted to project here was that there was very clearly a pattern here. There was something kicking off in the public sphere, and some cyber espionage reconnaissance taking place in and around those public statements.
So at the center of a lot of the things you're describing here is this backdoor that you all are calling XT4. What's going on with this?
So the XT4 is a fascinating piece of malware for a couple reasons. The first one being that it's a Linux-based backdoor, which is not the usual kind of backdoor suspect. And then the second thing is how every hour the script runs for only 180 seconds. So this is a backdoor that individuals would only have access to for 3 minutes every hour. Hmm. So knowing the exact time is important, or one can just continue sending packets at this server until something hits. It's fascinating because it's so tailored, and it's done a lot, not just through the 180 seconds, but also by making sure that the backdoor acts as a background process running through a cron script, that it remains fairly undetectable.
It's a very sophisticated backdoor, and that goes against the grain of generally what we've found in the course of our analysis of the targeting of the Tibetan networks, certainly in the recent few months. XT4, as we call it, is a Linux backdoor. It's specifically devised for the CentOS operating system. And it was sophisticated insofar as that it was embedded within a cron job system file, which essentially runs every hour on the web server. It's somewhat unclear to us at the minute with the data that we have that the XT4 relates directly to the Tsinghua campaigns, but we can say with authority that the Tsinghua University was probing the Tibetan network, like it was also probing the Alaskan networks and the Kenya networks and all the others that we've stated in the report.
And so what kind of activity is going on here? Are they using it to exfiltrate information? Is that basically what's happening?
We have not observed any particular successful activity surrounding this XT4. The traffic that we did find from the Tsinghua IP were actually, interestingly enough, not the right packets. So this XT4 backdoor requires a specific TCP header and set of flags in order to be activated, in order to be accepted, and to open up the backdoor for the incoming traffic. And interestingly enough, the Tsinghua IP only sent the wrong headers. So that suggests that either there was some operational mistake, either this Chinese-based traffic was uncertain of the packet headers or made some mistake, or they don't really have as much to do with each other as, or they're not as closely related as one would think.
Hmm. So what are your conclusions here? Discovering what you did, what are the takeaways?
So the key takeaway for us is that it's this pattern of activity, right? The Chinese authorities are also obviously very keen in maintaining an economic strategic advantage, especially when it comes to kind of ongoing discussions for large-scale investment programs. So what we hope we've kind of made clear in this report is, look, that there may well be a flurry of kind of bilateral cyber appeasement policies signed. You know, the US-Chinese kind of governments signed an agreement 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, which kind of relaxed the concerns around the case of cyber espionage on each other. But essentially what we're seeing here is, you know, a growing need and a solid requirement by the Chinese state to conduct espionage in line with strategic national interests. And so the intent is very clearly kind of borne out here. Now, I would be very surprised to see if the scanning activity kind of just stopped at scanning and reconnaissance, and if no further action wasn't taking place. I mean, that's the kind of key thing here for us to pick up on here, is to identify any onward exploitation in light of the TTPs that we've raised in this report.
The biggest takeaway here is that even if you're a business or an organization that's attempting to be friendly with China and that is cooperating with China, you're still opening yourself up for risks related to cyber espionage and reconnaissance. So we've provided in the report the R rules and some more IOCs, but really the big thing to take away here is the risk factor. Obviously, having a well-thought-out incidents response and communications plan is important, making sure you compartmentalize your company data so that the sensitive information is better protected than the rest, and also being aware of partner or supply chain security standards when you're doing business with a foreign organization.
It's a case of making sure that if you're a corporate entity, if you're a government institution that has any dealings with China, corporately or with the state, to make sure that your intrusion detection systems and your intrusion prevention systems are configured correctly to block connections from non-standard IP addresses. So, you know, we've highlighted the Tsinghua IP in the report that we've produced. The first thing I would suggest everyone to do is to kind of alert on that IP and block any connections from it. But, you know, going forward, I mean, the likelihood is that there'll be other IP addresses, there'll be novel techniques used by cyber threat actors to probe corporate networks. So it's a case of being aware of what a normal connection, a normal suite of connections would look like for your corporate network, and to monitor for any anomalies based on regular patterns of behavior. We've also provided a YARA rule for the XT4 backdoor. So if there's any indication of that XT4 backdoor being deployed on your network, the YARA rule, if we're on your host-based sensors, flags up an alert. Well, that's something to be concerned of, and we'd be very interested in learning more about any instances of the XT4 backdoor being deployed anywhere around the world. On top of that, you know, some of the kind of basic hygiene, cyber hygiene guidance is a rule still valid here. You know, keep all your software and applications up to date. Make sure you're scrutinizing your email correspondence for malware, and making sure that, you know, spear phishing attempts are mitigated by stringent scrutinization of those attachments and mail services. And, you know, in terms of kind of making sure that you've compartmented your data on host networks, so that if there is a compromise, that the attacker has to work doubly as hard to gain access to sensitive corporate data by making sure that sensitive data was compartmented accordingly and protected with appropriate security measures.
In general, I mean, when you look at this overall, how much does this align with what you come to expect from Chinese nation state actors? Does this fall into pretty much their typical tradecraft?
Oh, absolutely. I think that because China is really growing into a cyber powerhouse and is determined to become this global influencer, they're going to be acting out in a more proactive and perhaps sometimes aggressive manner in cyberspace. And so when one is trying to research these Chinese actors, I don't think that this would come as much of a surprise.
No matter who you speak to in terms of a government agency or a corporate that has dealings with China, that they no doubt are observing, probing of the network perimeter by Chinese IPs. Now, what was very surprising from my perspective that the activity was actually originating from an IP that had Huawei's registration details resolving to Tsinghua. I would have expected to see the activity being kind of directed through a level of obfuscation, perhaps through a VPS or something like that. This was quite a low-hanging fruit, really. I mean, if you're a security analyst at a corporate, you know, you really need to be aware of a Tsinghua IP probing a network. Right? I mean, it should be raising some concerns as you kind of look at the IP geo. That's something that's fairly easy to kind of mitigate against.
Our thanks to Winona DeSombre and Sanil Chohan from Recorded Future for joining us. The research is titled Chinese Cyber Espionage Originating from Tsinghua University Infrastructure. You can find it on the Recorded Future website.
And now, a message from CyberBit. Mastering cybersecurity is like mastering a sport. You build muscle memory through rigorous practice, then you train as a team to foster cohesion while operating under pressure. Like athletes, cybersecurity professionals thrive on hands-on simulation. But traditional courses, certifications, and open-source labs won't build you a winning team. You need CyberBit. CyberBit offers a hyper-realistic simulation environment for your SOC, IR, and C-suite to refine your skills, all using the market-leading SIEMs, EDRs, firewalls, and WAFs they use every day. CyberBit is offering CyberWire listeners a free live-fire exercise. Sign up your team now at cyberbit.com/cyberwire. The CyberWire Research Saturday is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everybody. It's Maria Varmazes here, your host over at T-Minus Space Daily, and sometimes a guest on Hacking Humans, too. We here at N2K CyberWire work hard to bring you concise, intelligence-driven news and commentary, and we'd like to know how we're doing. Please take a few minutes to complete our audience survey and share your feedback to help us continue to grow and meet your needs. Visit cyberwire.com/survey. That's cyberwire.com/survey to get started. Thanks so much for your input as we reach for the stars. It means the universe to us.